There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Hello and welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. My name is Carter Rodriguez. I'll be your host for this evening. Your normal host, Justin Rowan, is away. But in his stead is friend of the pod, really the third host of the Chase Down Podcast, in my estimation. Jeff Nomina, waiting for next year, a thousand other places. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. I think I've said this when I've been on before, but I normally listen to all my pods at like 1.5 speed. And so it's always funny to come on the pod and hear you guys talking like just normal speed.
Just droning.
It throws me off. Yeah, it throws me off completely.
I've heard people talk about how when they watch the live stream, when they hear the music, it's really jarring.
Yes,
like you really, really feel it then. But anyway, so the NBA finals are still kind of raging on. We've got some Cavs news. Team USA just got embarrassed by Nigeria. So there's a lot to talk about. I'll go dealer's choice. What would you like to go first, Jeff? Would you like to talk Sexton trade rumors? Would you like to talk Kevin Love's so-so performance against Nigeria? Would you like to talk about Darius Garland height watch? Where do you want to go?
Let's keep the people. Let's keep them waiting for the good juicy trade rumors and height watch stuff. Let's start with the K Love stuff.
Yeah. So Love had an inauspicious start to his Team USA reign, which has more negative press than I was expecting. Like, I feel like a lot of people are mad that he's on the team, and I didn't know we cared about the 12th man this much.
Yeah, people were really, Twitter was really up in arms about this. And I agree. I did not think of this as a thing that people cared about. And I feel like Melo was still getting him pretty late in his career when he was no longer a thing, really, to much less consternation. But maybe I'm just misremembering.
I couldn't agree more. I've been very, very confused by it. But I mean, he certainly didn't make it any better for himself. I think Darius ended up playing more minutes than him in the game because he was having a terrible foul trouble and then just wasn't effective at all he only had, he only played 3 minutes and he had three fouls. Jesus Christ.
That's impressive.
That is tough stuff. It's hard to have much of an opinion on it though. I will say that because here's the reality of the situation, at least to me, we were pretty sure that Kevin was not Team USA quality, at least Olympic Team USA quality player at this point in his career. And we thought, hell, this is a networking event and maybe a chance for him to kind of prove himself in a winning situation. If he has a really bad run, are the Cavs any worse off, in your opinion, than they were if he hadn't played at all?
No, not at all. Even if he were to get injured or something, I don't feel like it changes the Cavs. I think I'm more pessimistic on the buyout front than anybody. I think this is like absolutely heading towards a buyout. And the only way that changes is if he were to play so well that a couple of teams actually expressed interest in even just kind of like a swap of contracts that maybe the Cavs found more useful or something like that. Like I don't think there was any avenue where he's going to go from being tradable to not being tradable or something like that.
Yeah, I do think the one spot is like, if there was any lingering hope that he could be like helping a contender, if he continues to play this poorly, then there is a degree of like, no, that is not the stage of his career he's in. You shouldn't even trade an equally bad contract for him. Because he just can't help you. But I don't know if I buy that. I wonder if this is a bit of an overreaction, but if it stays this bad, I guess that's the only kind of downside that you can examine, right?
It could also just be he's less willing to give money back in a buyout because he doesn't think he's going to go make it somewhere else. You know, his market could cool down to the point where he doesn't even feel like I think Blake Griffin kind of knew if he got out, had some success at all, he might be able to make a little bit of money back or
you on the next contract, not the first one out, which is going to be a minimum with a contender, but like, you know, next year, maybe.
Right, where you can just at least recoup that. And, you know, he might look at it and say, all right, I'm not even going to get that. And so he's less motivated to try to get out of the contract. And teams are less willing to, you know, they're not calling him up as much saying, hey, you're going to go to a really good situation. You know, his opportunities could also dry up a little bit.
I think it would have to go real, real wrong the whole way. You know, like he can't have a single good game or even look good in practice for that to be the case. Because, like, the reality is, Blake Griffin was about as bad as you could be for most of the season.
True.
And got bought out and immediately went to the Nets. Like, pedigree is pedigree is pedigree. So, like, to that extent, I don't think he's going to be in that much trouble for his next job if a buyout were to occur. But it certainly can clear delusions. Maybe less so from the front office, because I always felt like if a trade's going to get done with Kevin, it's more likely going to be because a player who still holds him in high regard says, hey, we can go get someone to help us. So I almost wonder if a bad performance in these Olympics might hurt him more in the eyes of his peers than in the eyes of front offices who might have already kind of decided where he is.
That's very true. So like, he's got a couple of buddies, they all like playing together, but if they see him up close and are like, okay.
Ooh,
yeah. And I mean, we're pretty much talking about like Dame or something, right?
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Right? So, like, Portland rumors.
If you want to put that fine of a point on it, sure.
Well, you know, it could be some of the Nets guys. It could be a lot of them. The two teams that make the most sense, right? That we've talked about
as his next destination, too. Whether it's a trade or a buyout. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, it was a disappointing start. I'm not putting that much stock into it. I mean, no one played well. To be very, very clear, I mean, they lost to Nigeria. That means no one played well. It's a team they beat by 86 points 8-9 years ago.
Right. So Nigeria played well. I mean, in a little bit that I was able to watch, I watched a few minutes of it. You know, they weren't giving them anything either. But and he's also somewhat of a matchup player at this point in his career, right? Like this could have just been the game where it's not gonna work, and there's gonna be other games that are. You know, he's going to be stretching defenses out and helping quite a bit more. So, he's not going to be great every game. So, we might have just had the bad one first.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's going to play. Unless Pop just takes him out of the rotation, which, by the way, he can't. And we should discuss this because Pop can't just not play Kevin Love because there aren't any big men on this team. It's Bam.
Yeah,
it's
really
Draymond,
light.
Kind of. And then Kevin. And those are really the only fours on the roster, even outside of like Tatum's kind of a four, Katie's kind of a four, but it's pretty tiny, man.
And that's, you know, people who are upset that he was on the team, like there weren't a whole lot of options. Yeah, they kind of needed it.
You know, what's funny is he's probably like the more we've thought about it, the best candidate to be that, you know, backup center on this team is probably also on the Cavs. It's Jared Allen.
Right.
Like it's
and
him,
his
like
free agency. There's like, no way.
Like Greg Wessinger, you know, great Kings blogger, tweeted when I kind of talked about the lack of big American centers that could be on this team if AD wasn't available. He non-ironically brought up Rishon Holmes, and I'm like, yeah, he would be pretty good. And that's not a good sign. Like, I mean, The U.S. is going to often find themselves outgunned at the center position. They weren't in this game. I mean, there's no great pivot on Nigeria, but like, fact of the matter is, and I'm not sure Bam is a great international player yet by any stretch of the imagination. He wasn't like that team. Like, this team is two tournaments in a row not impressing people. I think that has to matter, because it's not like this team sucks. Like, they have some high-end talent. It's just that mid-level isn't as good. Like, you think of those 2008 teams, they just were like 11 deep with super duper stars, and now after the starting five, it's like, oh, Zach LaVine's out there, Draymond, who is well past his prime, is out there, Kevin Love is out there. Like, it's just not as good once was.
The last second when they were trying to hit the three to tie, and, you know, it got into Levine's hands pretty early. Like, I think the play was set up for him to come off a screen, right? And it's like, all right, if you're writing up the last second play for Zach LaVine, like, this doesn't feel like a great statement on where we are as a team.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and obviously Brad Beal's going to play better. Tatum is kind of like what he is in international play right now. Like, it's not someone who's just going to take over for you. There's just, and I don't think Dame is a good international player. That's the other take I've been cooking in the background. He is food out there on defense.
And we should take that into account with Kevin Love too, because he's not going to go out there and be one of the better players. If the good players are struggling, Kevin Love's not going to be the guy to bail you out. No. He's going to be the guy who's playing off of the good players and eating you, because those guys are cooking you and you can't do anything with him. So, you know, it's not shocking that if the team struggled, Kevin Love's going to struggle.
Yeah, he's going to be feasting on open threes and, you know, just boxing out, getting boards, not forcing stops, and the rest of the team's going to have to play better. I mean, there's just no way around it. Who did play pretty okay. I wouldn't say he played well. He had 4 fouls in 6 minutes. But Darius was out there, and it was kind of fun to get to see Darius playing with the senior team. I don't know if he's someone who's going to have, like, I don't know if they're looking at a guy like him and saying, you're our future. But with a few players still playing in the finals, it is really cool to kind of get to see Darius get this call out. Like, it's not quite shades of Kyrie when he was on the select team, just cooking the senior team in practice, but it does feel validating in a sense for what we're seeing. Cause like, the fact of the matter is that outside of a few specific members of the basketball intelligentsia, like, no one's talking about Darius Garland much. And I don't know what you think, Jeff, but I feel like it's very validating to see him get this call.
Yeah, when Kyrie was there, he showed he didn't just belong. Like, he showed that he was, like, an important, like, with those guys, but beat those guys.
Yeah, I can cook you.
And so it was very different. That was more like, all right, Kyrie's here, he's this good. Whereas with Darius, I feel like it's more, all right, these guys recognize him as this good, and this is a great experience for those guys to be in his ear for this whole summer, telling him, you know, all right, you can do this, do that, how to play.
Yeah, we're definitely still in the USA basketball is doing more for Darius Garland than Darius Garland is doing for USA basketball phase.
But don't you hope Dame's just telling him, like, every time he touches the ball to shoot it?
I hadn't really considered that as, like, an interaction, but you're 100% correct.
Like, that's the biggest change Darius can make to his game, other than the fact that he's 6'6 now, is that if he just starts pulling up from three all the time, he's a completely different player, and he has the skill set. You know, he just needs the mindset. And so I, like, that's my whole hope for this Team USA experience for him, is just, you've got Beal and Dame and Tatum just being like, shoot it every single time. I don't care how far back you are, just launch it.
Yeah, I mean, that is really like that. Those are the guys that you kind of want around him, especially Dame, because Dame is such a killer. You know, he's not someone who wants to just facilitate. I think it is really, really good for Darius to get these reps. I think it's validating that he's on the team. And he does look bigger. I know how he watches a joke, but it's kind of not a joke sometimes. Because, like, that's the thing. That, like, this happens. It happens. Like, we joke about it, but guys do get bigger. These guys grow spurt late. And, like, if nothing else, he's continuing to bulk up, which is really important, because that frame is a problem for him, or at least it has been.
The frame is such a huge deal, because he's, you know, he gets dinged up a lot. So first off, just keeping him healthy. But he also
did
just
you read,
doesn't...
by the way, that he went knee to knee with another player in the first practice? And I was like, ah.
Isn't it amazing you can read a tweet and like halfway through a tweet have like five emotions?
Yeah.
Like, it's like two sentences and I like feel so many emotions getting through the tweet. But, you know, it said he was back like the afternoon playing or whatever it was. So I felt much better. But yeah, I mean, absorbing those kind of dings, but also just absorbing contact and be able to get to the line. Wasn't he like not historically bad, but pretty bad at his free throw rate this year? And if he it's one of the things
that keeps his true shooting percentage from being elite, you know, like the three, he's just like, he and Sexton are so similar in the sense that they always slash good numbers. It just doesn't matter because their proportions are way off.
And they just don't play a modern game.
No.
You watch what, you know, we're talking about Dame and Beal and Tatum. Like, those guys just want to shoot threes and get fouled, right? Like, the whole NBA right now is shoot threes and get fouled. And Sexton and Garland just, like,
and the cat and the Cavs lead the league in dunks.
And floaters.
And they definitely, in floater attempts. So, like, I do hope the frame is getting there, but I do think more than anything, it's funny because for Cavs fans, USA Basketball is kind of this like harbinger of doom to some extent, of like, oh, that's where they go to collude to get away, to leave us. Mm-hmm. You know, like going back to 2008, the Redeem Team, and in now I'm like just sponge up winning habits, and I'm really, really happy Darius decided to stick around, because I know he had some scheduled plans at the end of mini camp where he was going to kind of. And at first he was considering declining going. I'm really glad he had a change of heart. Someone must have gotten in his ear and like, no, you're going, buddy. Like, you
that report was hilarious because it changed in like 15 minutes.
No, it was very quick.
Like, how did he change his mind in between those tweets? It was kind of
ridiculous. But it is one of those things where I believe the reporting. I do think he was probably like, oh, you know, like, I'm sure that you've been in this spot. I know I have, where it's like, you've made a commitment and you get something else that pops up, but the honorable part of your brain is like, I said I'd go with them to this thing, and then you're like, wait a minute, no, I can't do that. You gotta go do this cool, amazing thing, you know what I mean? Like, so I think that's exactly what he was going through. It sounded like he had like a vacation planned with like family or something like that, and then just, at least I'm reading between the lines on the reports, and then was like, I gotta go play with Team USA until the finals are over.
Happens to us. We don't have anything else pop up. We just committed to something and then decide we don't want it.
Well, you know, that's probably more accurate.
He probably had cool plans. I'm saying when that happens to me,
it's more like, oh, I forgot cool that plans. I wasn't going to want to do anything tonight.
But yeah, I'm extremely glad that he's there and just soaking this all up. To your point, even just the winning, you know, culture of it, just having guys around and experiencing some winning. Well, cause I wonder how much
maybe,
that wears on.
Maybe
guys.
Less winning than we were hoping for.
Yeah, true. Very true.
My God. If you had just given if you had told Team USA Basketball that Greg Popovich, their veteran coach with ties to armed forces, this is supposed to be his swan song, and between 2019 FIBA and this, oof.
Yeah.
It is ugly. Bad. Like, they have not looked good at any point since Coach K left. And by the way, I felt like people are going to crab on Pop, and maybe rightfully so because the team's not succeeding. I felt like the slippage was starting in Coach K's last year too, where like they just, like, whether the world has re-caught up to them or they've gotten lax again or something, but like the talent level hasn't been as high. Like, I just, like, Chris Middleton ain't making the Redeem Team. You know what I mean?
Right. And it is hard to know. Like, are they just not, is it just no time together where these other teams have more of that? Cause, you know, Canada has a lot of talent and kind of some similar troubles, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's just some of that or what, cause it doesn't, I don't think it's like a team of guys who wouldn't take it serious. Like, I don't think Dame's just there messing around or anything,
no,
right?
Like, but
it's a weird thing.
Yeah, I do think it is, like, the team, like, it almost felt like, okay, we go back to Dream Team. They didn't have to practice together, really. They just ran them off the court. And then, you know, 2004 happens, then 2008, it's like, hey, we're actually going to have a mini camp, guys. We're going to run some sets. You know, we're actually going to get some reps together and learn how to play together a little bit. And then they ran them off the court. And now it's like, no, you can do that, but you could, the USA can still probably do that, just run a mini camp, run some sets and have some semblance of an identity and be good, but they can't do it with a B minus team anymore. Like, it's just not like the Middletons, who's not even there yet, but like the, you know, the teams with just pieces that haven't quite figured out international basketball. Like, I do not think Bam has figured out international basketball yet. Like, I don't watch him and go, oh man, the other team's afraid of Bam Adebayo, which
it
is
does
funny.
Feel like,
because he's really
quite
good.
A bit of just figuring it out. Like, there is some, just, it's a different, it's a
they're
little
young
bit different
as hell, man. That's the thing. Like, Dame's old, KD's old, but there's not a lot of reps on the floor either.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very fair.
Like, all their bucket getters are like 23.
And they have just like a lot of bucket getters. And I don't know, you know, there's a lot of guys who maybe aren't going to be great defensively.
Like, how bad could this team use Chris Paul?
Yes.
Like, they need like, or a LeBron or someone. Like, they've always had, at least almost every single year, they've had some savant on the court that like just makes the offense go. And like, you need those savants when you don't have the reps together. And
they kind of do it on both ends. Like, yeah, a guy who just is so good that he knows, you know, the other teams aren't running some magical new system. Like, they can snuff stuff out and just be better than everyone else on that end too, and just blow things up. And it just didn't seem like they were really causing a whole lot of trouble. On
yeah.
That
like
end.
There just aren't like elite decision makers on this roster. You know, KD, mm-hmm. KD, that's like probably like, as great as he is, that's probably his weakest attribute, right? Is like his playmaking. And that's like, you mm-hmm. know, that's the weakest part of an amazing game. So it's not like it's weak, but Dame is not a floor raiser for the rest of his teammates normally. Tatum's a pure bucket getter. Really, the best offensive engine they got is like Draymond. And that's just not going to work because he doesn't take wide open layups anymore.
Right.
So, yeah, it is just a little, USA basketball is in a weird spot, and I kind of like it personally. I know everyone, like, I don't get as disdainful about it. I think it's kind of exciting. Maybe that makes me a bad patriot, but it's just interesting. Like, I like to see, you know, I always go back to the Zach Lowe quote about the KD Warriors, where he's like, yes, people like to see greatness, but what they really like is to see greatness challenged.
Yes.
And like, it's not like, I didn't think the Redeem team was that fun because they just absolutely knocked the piss out of everyone. Like, it's only fun when a team is it's 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter and it's an 8-point game. That's
right.
Fun.
Competitive basketball is awesome. Like, competitive basketball game coming down to crunch time, you're trading buckets. It's as fun as it possibly gets. Right. It's why I love the play-in games. But yeah. Give me more competitive basketball. Give me more basketball with stakes to it that is competitive and close, and you know, guys are going all out. And
yeah,
so
there's so many weird people online who are like, you don't like basketball if you don't like watching these plays. I'm like, well, I like watching the play like in isolation, like right. You know, like that crazy Nets play against the Cavs this year where they had that crazy bang 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 pass where it like started with Blake like throwing a 30 foot behind the back pass at half court, and like, that's a beautiful play, but like, you're telling me that game was fun to watch? Like, watching a team just get wrecked? Like,
I'm shocked at how many people say that.
I think a lot of people don't even know what they mean. I don't even think they mean it. I think they just think they're supposed to say it so they don't look whiny.
Like, in any sport, like, not even just basketball, like, what sport do you enjoy watching blowouts? Like, at no point in any sport do I enjoy that. Like, I always want to watch a close game, right? That's why I don't really watch college football that much.
I like watching cat. Like, the only real spot is if it's my team. Like, if the Cavs are beating the crap out of someone, that's fun. But like, in the abstract, that's not fun.
Right. I can imagine a lot of other people did not enjoy watching those Cavs Hawks playoff series as much as we did.
Oh,
right?
But boy, did we like them.
Those were so great.
Oh, man. Anyway, let's move off Team USA and let's talk about the Jason Lloyd report that came out today that basically didn't have a ton of new information as far as I could tell. It was really a confirmation of whispers and rumbles we've been hearing from a lot of other sources. And I will say this with the Sexton stuff. It started in kind of inauspicious places, you know, where you'll from accounts that don't, you know, have the major following. So it was a little tough to kind of gauge, like, how real is the Sexton is available noise? And it seems like Lloyd is, you know, kind of the more official corroboration of that. What was your takeaway on that report? Because again, like if you were reading the tea leaves as of late, not a terribly new set of information.
No, it sounds, to your point, it's just corroborating kind of what we've heard. And it not, you know, I hate when pods just talk about Twitter the whole time, but Twitter's gotten pretty toxic with the sexting conversations, I think, recently. But I think if you take a step back, like everybody is acting pretty rationally in the situation. Like it seems pretty clear the team is not going to offer him the max this offseason.
That certainly, that seems like a functional certainty, which is, by the way, what everyone was so mad at them about, like the idea that they might offer him in the vet max. And it's like, they've not really indicated they will. I don't know.
Right. Social media posts and stuff is not the same as like the GM it. Like it's, there's a break there. Right. So, all right. We know the team's probably not going to offer him the max. We know that he probably wants the max, and his numbers compared to other guys who've gotten the max are close enough that he can make that argument, right? Like if I was Colin Sexton, I would be pushing for a max deal, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would certainly be asking for as much money as I can get. Now, so I am of the opinion that if I were Colin, I mean, as a poor man, I am on team like, hey, if they offer me 4 years and $80 million, that sounds good to me, but I can't. Yeah, I'm not. That's why I'm not Colin Sexton, you know, right. And specifically not his agent.
So we know that the Cavs are not offering the max. We know that Colin Sexton probably wants the max and has a close enough argument to it to be asking for it.
Not absurd to be asking for it, for sure.
Right.
Based on his age, production, etc.
Right. And there's no real urgency for the team to do it right now. Like, we're hearing a lot about these teams that are interested. We're hearing about trade rumors. Like, to me, it sounds a lot like, hey, Colin Sexton is trying to put some leverage, trying to put some noise out there. There's some teams that are, you know, the names that you normally throw out when you're trying to get paid, like a New York and a Miami, like those teams are always in the hunt for like the next good player. They're always in the trade rumors. Like, it just sounds like everybody's doing what they should be doing. The team is not making a decision they don't have to make and overpaying a guy just to do it.
And they're trying to get paid. And I do think based on the reports, it does seem like they are gauging the market here.
And they should.
As
if he's saying
that
he wants paid, as he should, they should be checking the market and seeing, okay, we're not super comfortable paying this guy. He's trying to get paid. He's making, you know, there's these teams out there that are saying they want to trade for him, which means they probably want to pay him. So we need to gauge what the interest is. Like, I
and
like
the reality
is
what
is
you
acting,
can't. Here's the only thing you can't be if you're the Cavs. You can't be the Sacramento Kings with Bogdanovich, where you didn't want to pay him, you didn't trade him. You didn't match his offer and restricted free agency. So you're just out. You just lose the years of development and you start without it. Now, they're lucky that they drafted a guy like Halliburton who can make that sting a little less painful. But, you know, the fact that they weren't able to get anything of value for the next stage of their team without him is a huge loss. That's what the Cavs can't do. And that's why this due diligence is really important. And and I guess my question to you is like, what is kind of your minimum return in a Colin Sexton trade that makes it worth it? Is it, you know, you hear that New Orleans is looking for someone who has a little bit more veteran, like they're looking to shop 10 for someone who can, you know, help now. Like, are you looking for draft compensation at all? Or is it only like, cause when Justin and I have talked about it, it's always been kind of like use him to package to go big game hunting. But if no big game is available, like what is your bar?
That's a great question. And, you know, something like 10 sounds great. I've also looked at like the Warriors, like, all right, would they want to get off of, what did they pay? Like $150 million in luxury tax last year. Like, would they try to get off Wiggins and be interested in like a seven swap or something? But draft picks sound great until you're actually like, all right, who do you want to take there? Right. Like, it's a little bit harder to look at that.
I just feel like the draft pick thing makes sense if the team was messaging something different than their messaging. What they're messaging in every public and private forum is, we're trying to make the playoffs next year. We're sick of losing. We want to finally establish some kind of winning culture in the absence of LeBron James. And they haven't been able to do it yet. And that seems to be the directive. So, like, while in a vacuum, getting the 10th overall pick and, you know, sending out matching salary and getting some matching salary back for Colin Sexton sound is a good asset play if you don't want to pay him, right? Like, your books stay clean another year, you get closer to moving off Kevin, and all of a sudden you are maybe generating some cap room. That's fine, but like, it doesn't really seem to align with what the team's trying to do to me.
No, you're 100% right that if winning is the goal, it's really hard to make a Sexton for draft pick trade. But I will say this, if they're drafting Mobley, which I think is kind of where we're assuming right now, or, you know, all the rumors are that Houston's going to take Green, and it's a, you know, there's three players in that tier. So if you're kind of assuming that, Mobley's likely going to take 2 years before he's really a winning player, right? Like, I mean, just he's fairly raw. He's fairly thin. Like, he just needs to bulk up and stuff for a year or two. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I think so. I think the idea is that if you're the Cavs, you're hoping to do a Memphis Grizzlies type thing where you've got, you're in year three of the rebuild. So even if Mobley's not ready to be an elite player yet, the rest of your roster is coming up to meet, to like be the tide that raises all boats.
Right.
That Darius takes a leap and Isaac takes a leap and Larry is healthy all year and Jarrett's around for a full year and locked up long term. So he's, you know, well incentivized to, you know, play his ass off and try to turn this team into a winning culture where, you know, you just need Evan Mobley to be a good rookie as opposed to a star.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that if you're the Cavs, that's what you're hoping for. Is that practical? I don't know. There aren't a lot of Grizzlies out there.
And finding that trade is difficult for Sexton. Like, if you're going to trade him for a draft pick, say it's 10 or whatever, you need to be thinking, all right, Okoro is so raw and so young. Mobley's going to be so raw and really young. We're going to trade Sexton, get draft pick. We're going to wait for Kevin Love to come off the books in 2 years. And we're going to do an Atlanta Hawks style thing where we've got a whole bunch of young guys that are, you know, some raw wings that are starting to come around.
We'll overpay. We're hoping.
Yes.
But that's just not what.
And
that's a play that makes sense. But I just don't think Kobe Altman and the ownership, based on reports, is thinking that way. So, like, if they are thinking that way, if they aren't thinking that way, then the only real Sexton trade that's tenable is the big game hunting approach that we've talked about, or taking another young player of similar quality or as a prospect that's maybe a year back, like the Tyler Heroes of the world.
Yes. Who,
you know, I don't think either of us are big Tyler Hero fans, but like, he was a really good player for a team that made the finals. And is a year or two behind calling on the contract scale where you can say, okay, we know it's not Colin. Let's see if it's Tyler Hero.
Yes, I can absolutely see that. That makes some sense, and it probably fits better. It fixes some of the, you know, can Sexland work? It might. We don't know, but it's not like an easy fit, no matter what, right?
No.
And especially if you're having Mobley and Allen on the other end, maybe that covers up for it. Like, maybe that makes it all a perfect fit, but you're also having like two weird fits.
And honestly, the 3-point volume, I don't know if getting a gunner from three next to Darius is a very different proposition than Colin, who's always going to shoot a good percentage. And I don't know is ever going to have the volume that you're looking for.
Right. And then you're still also going to have probably a giant hole at the three,
yeah,
which is still, like, just getting an average three on this team seems like such a massive floor.
And it might be Isaac. Like, he was.
Yeah, I'm huge on Okoro. I think he's going to be awesome. But I don't know that he's going to be that this year.
No, I mean, maybe. I mean, it's all the jumper, right? If it's good, then he'll be good. If it's still bad, he won't be good.
Right.
Especially if they're playing Evan Mobley next to Jared Allen. That's going to be real squeezy. The only real scenario that I see you taking, like, not great value back for Colin is if it does help you get off Kevin's contract. Like, if you can get a guy like Eric Bledsoe back, whose contract is non-guaranteed for not next season but the season after, and save yourself basically $30 million and be a cap room player next year, then okay, sure. Like, if you can get like a Nikhil Alexander Walker or some kind of prospect back that has a couple years of service that might be a player for you, I'm starting to get it. But I'll tell you this much, man, I'm still on team Let's take this all the way to the end of restricted free agency. If I don't have an offer that sounds great to me, that makes this easy for me, then I'm just going to hang. Like, I like Colin Sexton. I think he's a helpful player. I think that the Cavs have all the leverage here. I think people are so afraid of restricted free agency now and like the PR hit of it, of using it to its full power, that like it's just like not a conversation anymore. No one does the just go get your best offer and I'll match thing. Like everyone always bids against themselves, and I don't really understand it, especially like for a tier three or four prospect like Colin Sexton. Like I don't think a lot of people see like an all NBA future for him. Maybe he does, but I don't think the wider market does. So it's like, sure, why not wait? And if at the end of the year you really don't love him and you don't think he's part of your future, we'll just match anyway and try to find a trade part.
I would love, and you know, this year clearly fell apart, but it would be amazing to see Colin Sexton in a playoff series. I feel like that would be so much more valuable than seeing like anything that we've like, what happens when a team is solely focused, knowing that he's the guy who, you know, every time he gets it, he's going to be trying to get it in the bucket. Just with his shot profile and size, like, can he be shut down or is he special in that way that he can still get buckets? And I would love to kind of have a somewhat, like you just mentioned it with Hero, like we saw him do it in a playoff series and that completely changes how I think about him, right? Like, wouldn't you just love to kind of have that idea with Sexton?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I just don't know if we're going to get that chance as of now. But again, like I think me and you have always been very aligned on this front, which is what's the rush, guys? What's the rush? Like unless you have a deal that's going to make you better this year, just hold off. Like, I just don't think adding the 10th overall pick and some minor cap relief gets the Cavs where they're trying to be. Again, if they were of the opinion that they're still 3 years away, then this is a different conversation. But at no point has that been the messaging.
You do run the risk of, you know, having the Bogdanovich situation, though. You know, that you are setting yourself up to say.
But you don't run that risk, Jeff, because you just match. That's the point. You match and you figure it out later. Because the idea is that if he is valuable to anyone, if he has any value, he'll get an okay offer. You match it and you deal him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe his agent likes you less at the end of it. But you know, that's the game. That's the way it is. You don't let people walk for nothing.
Feels like we've been in the doing agents favors game for a long time.
For at least a few years. And I have appreciated it. I think it's smart. I think they've mostly done it in spots where it doesn't hurt the Cavs. But you know, that's why you do agents favors, is eventually you got to cash it in. You got to burn a little,
right?
Burn a little capital. So
it would be nice to see the other side of it, right?
Absolutely.
To get the other side of that.
And I know that's not really how the game works. It's not like agents are like, wow, you helped my client out 3 years ago. Let me deliver you an elite star to Cleveland. Like, right. It doesn't work that well, but like at least you can keep things, you know, from being terribly contentious, hopefully. And they can be that kind of mediator for you, that positive connector to the player. So there aren't a ton of hurt feelings, because this is, I mean, you are messing with people's livelihood. But unfortunately, that's the way the CBA is structured.
It does crack me up that for all of the CJ McCollum comparisons with Sexton, like they're almost similar right now in the sense that they're too good to trade, you know,
for nothing,
to trade for, right, but not quite good enough to trade for something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they're very similar in that sort of trade value area, where like Sexton's too good to give up for, like you said, the 10th pick and some salary cap relief. But like, I don't know what you're getting for him either.
And yeah. And that's why that's why I've been enamored with some kind of, you know, conglomeration of assets. Like Justin and I have been very open about being willing to move the 22 first rounder for a really good player. But one of those players has to become available too. You don't just get those guys. And they're going to have to, and the Cavs are in a spot too, where not only are they going to have to be available, they're going to have to be available with term on their contract, where the Cavs want to keep them around and be just imperfect enough that they're not just going to immediately bolt to LA the second they can.
Right.
Because unfortunately, that's the league. And as much as Lakers fans get pissy when you bring up exceptionalism, like, that's part of the game. Like, dudes want to go live in New York. They want to go live in LA. I get it. I was once young and not washed. So, like, you have to be really, really wise with those kind of pieces, even if they do become available. And as it currently seems, none of them are. So, yes, we're going to keep pining for Brandon Ingram until it's time not to. But the thing that also hurts the Cavs on the big game hunting market, and I'm getting a little rambly here, so forgive me. But the other thing that hurts them on the big game hunting market is that some big names might be becoming available at the tippy top. Guys like Dame Lillard.
Yes.
Where yes. instead of, if you're the Pelicans and you know Brandon Ingram's not like loving it here, and the fit with Zion's not like awesome, but you know he's a pretty good tier 2.5, tier 3 star. And you got a team like Portland who doesn't historically tank, and Dame does hit the market, you can go, hey, we can give you Brandon Ingram in every first round pick we got in the AD deal.
Right.
So instead of, you know, trading out of talent, they're trading up on talent. So that's a scary part too, if the Cavs are trying to go for some of these tier 2, tier 3 stars. So ultimately, you know, I just think that we're just going to keep playing the patience game on this podcast. And as an extended host, I'm glad that you're aligned with us.
Yeah. And I kind of kicked this all off. Like, things seem like contentious with the fan base every time this comes up. And I don't think anybody's like in the wrong here. Like,
no.
The team should be thinking about this. Sexton should be trying to get paid. The team shouldn't be paying him. And I mean, right now, they shouldn't be like maxing him out today, this offseason. We don't need to. Like, everybody is acting exactly how they should be acting. And it's probably way less contentious for them than it is for all of us who think about it 24 hours a day.
Right? Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that they all kind of get what's happening right here.
I've been on Twitter a lot less lately, so I feel like I'm not seeing as much contentiousness, and it's great.
Yeah.
It really is great. Anyway, Jeff, thank you so much for joining as our kind of, you know, permanent third co-host. We really appreciate you being on. And we really appreciate our listeners. So if you are a supporter of the pod, you know, please head to iTunes, head to Spotify, wherever you are, subscribe, leave a review, unsubscribe, resubscribe, help cook those books. Justin, we'll see you soon. Draft is coming up faster than it seems possible. I'm really, really excited. Everyone, thank you for listening. Stay safe. And as always, go Cavs.